Welcome, Nate. Show number 29.
Show 29. This is season 2, episode 1. That was brand new music by Dust Lab, a.k.a. Ridiculous, a.k.a. Steve Gordon, a.k.a. Donkey Kong.
Yeah, I don't know. He's got other names. And, yeah, but we brought in the house here.
We have a very cool thing going on this weekend, don't we? We're actually 3 weekends ago.
Since it's show 29, we brought in Mr. Rule 29, Justin.
How you doing today, Justin Aaron?
Fantastic.
Second appearance on the show.
I'm honored.
First time being on the show at the home base.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So last time
being
we were
O-Town.
On, we did half the show in near Chi-Town in Geneva.
We've got Christine Taylor here from Hallmark.
There we do.
Hello.
And you're in charge of all of the property, like Star Wars, Simpsons.
Can we say that you're in charge of the Star Warsing of Hallmark?
Yes. Like you can say that I'm responsible for the Star Warsing of Hallmark. You could possibly say that.
Which Nate and I do approve of.
Yeah, and the Simpsonizing
basically movie and televisionizing.
Right. God, love it. Okay.
And then we brought back Steve Hartman,
yep.
who was on episode 1 of season 1.
Yeah, he launches our seasons. That's what you do.
Thanks for having me back to Omaha.
Fantastic. You can drive up here anytime you want. That's what we do. We say, hey, come over. Okay. So, yeah, we are fresh off of our 3 o'clock in the afternoon shot of whiskey. We've been working hard all day.
3:15. We don't start that early.
Sorry. 3:15 shot of whiskey. And so here we are. Now, what have we been doing all weekend? Okay, so all weekend we've been drinking. What have we been doing today? Today we have been working on the 36-point anniversary plus design benefit project for Life in Abundance, who we got kind of hooked up with after hanging out with Justin up in Chicago up on whichever episode show. Was that 24, 23?
I'm not sure. But thanks, by the way, for doing that for LA. I think that's amazing.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about what we're doing. We've mentioned it previously, like in passing on previous shows. Let's tell the world what we're doing. I'm going to let one of you guys do it. Steve, what do we do?
Wow, it's been a fun-filled day. Just power-packed design, nonstop creativity, and it's been amazing how the activity level has been so low.
I was going to say the energy level today has been off the charts.
But you forget when everyone's just sitting in front of either a sketch pad or a computer, it's not like there's high energy.
Well, you would expect it when you have powerhouse people like Christine and Justin in the house.
That's true.
And Steve.
Right.
Yeah.
But then we got Steve bringing it down. So
yeah. Thanks, Steve.
And we're kicking off. We're getting off on the right foot.
Well,
here.
I have dirty thumbs, so that's exciting.
That's right. Everybody hold up your thumb for the audience at home to the microphone so they can
hear amazing.
The ink-covered thumbs that we have. So we've been working on our print for Life in Abundance that hopefully sometime soon, if not already, because we're recording this on the day that we're working on the poster. We're on the print.
Right, and this whole poster is being made possible by the people at Nina Paper and
right.
the fantastic people at
Spark.
With the letterpress place at Spark Print
yeah.
Solutions.
Right. Spark up in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Give them your business. Nina out in the world. Give them your business. They're good folks, and we couldn't be doing this without them. But let's talk. I keep trying to get it. What are we doing? We got a 12x18 work of art that was created today using the past tense. That was created 3 weeks ago.
And I think when you work with, and none of us other than me and you have worked together on a project. So I think it changes the dynamic when you come in the morning and you say, here's the project, come
you
up with
deal
the complete
with
solution.
Justin's face.
Right.
And
in the morning.
So we've made this print. We currently are really honing in on the final art. But we
it's
don't even
close.
At this
yeah.
point
yeah.
know exactly
close.
What the finished product's gonna be. But hopefully by now it's out there. The world can see it. So
go buy it.
Yeah, check it out. Well, obviously, you can go to 36 Point. We're going to have a huge thing to click on to go buy this poster. And you can also go to liaint.org.
There you go. And we might even have a microsite up for it by then.
Yeah, we're hoping.
No promises.
Yeah, we want to bang out a microsite. Hopefully in a single day,
right.
We'll bring all you guys back and we'll start coding
yeah.
real hardcore. we're going to take you out and get you so drunk you pass out at 10:30 again, and then we're going to code.
We expect no less.
There you go.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Okay, so basically, Donovan brought up one thing that is kind of interesting to talk about, which is taking on a project of this nature in such close proximity. In a room this size with people that you've actually never worked with before, but maybe you know. But really, I want to talk to you guys today about, you know, designing for the greater good. What do you get back from that? You know, what kind of
things
Well,
and how do you
get?
Go about finding the greater good to work for?
Well, true that. We found this one just by talking to Justin.
Yeah, we're like, hey, Justin, can we just leech off of your project? And he said, sure.
Yeah, we can leech.
That works for me.
Yeah. But like, Christine, we were talking a little bit yesterday that you used to do quite a bit of nonprofit type pro bono work. So just,
yes.
Well, like, for example.
Well, yes, actually, I did.
That's awesome.
I did a lot of pro bono work for some local theaters, arts organizations, and AIDS Walk, other things in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Again, note to Justin, thank you for bringing us in on this because I find it really exciting to be able to work on a project, not only with great designers that are in the room, but on something as big as Life in Abundance and helping change. I mean, I kind of did stuff that was more fun in the theater arts community, but being able to make an impact like this and reach, you know, half a world away by what we're doing is really exciting. So thanks.
I think that was something that we were all kind of struck with, or at least that I know that I was struck with today, just as we were kind of delving deeper into really what we are taking on and what the potential for change is if we, you know, if everyone were to buy out every single one of these posters, if they all sell, you know, the amount of change that we can drive out of that. And I hopefully in the micro site, let's just pie in the sky it.
Right.
And we can have that up there to track. We've sold X amount of posters. That means Y amount of good has been done in these specific ways.
Right. Do you want to document that now? Or
can we?
Sure.
You want, like, drill it down.
Okay.
For
so
us.
If you guys go and buy the poster, here's what's amazing. We will be able to support 250 kids for 1 year. That will include education, food. They'll actually have a home to live in, potentially their first home they've ever had. And then they'll also have counseling and other sort of support supplies that they need to get through school and that sort of thing.
Right. And you mentioned, though, it was kind of overwhelming when you gave us the talk about what we could do is how much more is out there to do. But we realized, just because you're only doing one little thing doesn't mean that if everybody does a little bit more, it's not going to make a larger change in the future.
But what I think is cool for what we do as designers is when you go to organizations like this and you're able to help them get their message out in a more impactful way than they could on their own, that's really, really rewarding in the sense that, you know, again, if we sell all our posters, we're supporting 250 kids. Now, you don't have to do that in Africa. You can do that anywhere. Every community has needs. So what can we do as creatives to get out there and be a part of that?
Right.
Right. For example, Steve, in St. Louis, what kind of causes do you take on? If you don't mind my asking, because you're on my show and I'm going to.
I guess I have to answer then.
Yeah.
Well, in my local community, not so much in St. Louis, I've gone, very small, and I'm in Edwardsville, so I support our local art center as one nonprofit and donate my time and creativity and you know, nonprofit experience actually to help lead the organization. That's where I'm giving back to my local community. And I also offer design services occasionally from other nonprofits that either help people or help businesses or promote our local town. So it's important for not only designers, but just about any professional to kind of give back to pick one organization or two to give their time to.
Is it more beneficial, do you think, to really focus on one rather than move around from
cause
to cause?
I think for me personally, if I can put more energy into one cause, for example, the Art Center, I can, you know, affect more change by helping us build our operation and get the word out and help fund it rather than spreading myself thin with a lot of different organizations.
Okay.
Yeah, I think from what I've seen, when you have a small shop, you can do the most good by sticking to one cause and focusing on that. I think I've seen much, much larger companies, like, let's say, Hallmark, that can have a couple things going at once and do a lot of good. You guys are working with Product Red.
Yes.
I understand. Can you tell us a little bit about what you guys – I know that you're not, say, the lead on that team.
Now, right? Actually, when that works, when a large company like that takes on a project, is it the same – do they give it to just a couple designers to work on, or do they spread that around?
That's actually a good question. When we started Product Red, and I don't know how other companies do it, but when we started Product Red, we did have a dedicated team to it, We had actually, that came from a writer who was really passionate about it and said Hallmark needs to get involved. She wrote the proposal and she did everything. Nice. Really kind of on her own, kind of obviously ran it by, but it kind of just started as one individual writer thinking about how can Hallmark make a difference? How can they be part of this Product Red phenomenon? And it all just kind of came cosmically together. But we do have a team actually now called the Socially Aware Connecting Team that focuses on Product Red, UNICEF, nice. Sustainability, and other types things that were great for, you know, the world and the environment. So, yeah, we have a dedicated team.
And what you're saying is, Steve, you do not have a dedicated team running six different...
No.
No?
No.
No.
Okay.
You have you.
That I know of. I mean, I,
that you're aware
there's
of.
A lot, there's it's a lot of rooms in my office that
it's
I
like,
don't
It's like the
in.
Army. He's a team of one.
I right. haven't mm-hmm. been in the basement of my office in like 6 months. I don't know what's going on down there, really. One of the things that that I'm actually curious about, I think it's pretty par for the course. We could obviously sit around here for half an hour and say, you know what's good? Doing design for causes. And we could have that talk.
Right.
I think just about everybody's just about heard that talk. Let's maybe take a moment. You know, we've got business leaders here. What are the steps to actually taking that on? What are the benefits of doing a reduced rate versus doing a a full cost donation? You know, how do you set up and deal with taxes at the end of the year?
And how do you treat the client as compared to your other clients? What do they give you in return for you donating services?
Yeah, the business side of this, because a lot of people want to give. I mean, that's kind of what I'm saying, is that it's out there. Giving back is good, and it's good for your heart. It's good for your creativity. As a business, what are the steps that you guys took initially in order to make that happen? Who wants to feel that?
From a business standpoint, working with a nonprofit, in my case, I have two that I work with. One I donate my time to and I sit on the board of directors with, which is that art center. Mm-hmm. The other is the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum and Foundation.
You know who is awesome? Abraham Lincoln.
He is amazing.
Love Abraham. He's
did they did the you bomb. Work in your contract that you get like a free top hat when you sign that one?
I do. That's where I keep my sandwiches when I visit.
Yep. I know a guy that gets free Girl Scout cookies. He gets free top hats.
I get free chocolate pennies. Actually, I treat, you know, they are a client of mine. So I treat them as a client. We have contracts. I just do good work for them.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a not-for-profit rate from when any non-for-profit company or organization or even government agency comes to me. They have a special rate versus the rate for a for-profit company.
Yeah, let's say like a commercial like rate versus a non-profit rate. Sure.
Half the... You know, the nonprofit's half of what I charge of what the.
Do you let them know that they're paying half? And how do you invoice that then? I mean, I've done it before where I do the design donation, so you bill it full and then you donate, or do you even mention it on your invoicing?
No, they just know at the beginning of the contract that this is half the normal rate, that this is the nonprofit rate, and any extra hours or anything like that is billed at this rate, which is always marked as half of what the normal rate is. And so I have two different contracts for two different types of company.
Because I know what Justin does is he'll invoice the full amount and then say, you know, remit this, and then I'll pay you back the half off.
Exactly.
But I'm kind of busy next week, so.
The check's in the mail.
Yeah, I'm going to get that in the mail right away.
Right. On the other side, just to follow up with what I was saying, for the Art Center, I still act as if, you know, try to be as professional as possible with them, since that's my local community. That's my name out there as a volunteer, and that still reflects on my company. So
yeah,
we do it in several different levels.
The skeezy way that I just mentioned.
Right, which is the best way to do it.
Really, I think.
We have, what I did is I asked my team what sort of things were important to them and what they wanted to work on. And we made this list, and then we talked about all the different options locally. We looked at the different contacts we had and figured out if there's any people we can connect to take care of or to be a part of X, Y, or Z. In fact, that's how we got involved in the Africa initiative with LA. But for us, when it comes to billing, we pick one organization, which happens to be LA for us right now, where we give 100% of our time to. Then we have another client called The Cradle. They're an adoption agency, and we do some stuff pro bono and some stuff at full rate. It just depends if they have a budget. But everything I do, like you talked about earlier, Donovan, I give them an invoice to show them, even if it's donated, here's what typically you would charge, you'd get charged for this kind of project. And they actually work that into their budget, and they try to always work that into the budget for the future. So
that they could pay you if they need.
Right.
Now, on these ones that you're giving 100% donation to, how do you tell them how much work you'll do as compared? Do you do like per project? You say, hey, we'll do a website, or do they just start giving you work and you just keep accepting it?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't imagine it would be open ended.
No, we sit down with them and help them write a strategic brief of what they need and how we'd go about doing that and what all the things that entails. And we treat it like real work too.
So you're not only involved in, because a lot of the projects they'll come through and you'll say, oh, I'll do that. You're actually involved in telling them what you will provide and what they need.
Right, and be a part of that planning. We give them the same process we try to give our clients, where we sit down with them and say, what's your goal? What are you trying to do? And then we give them ideas how to do that. Because a lot of times they think that they need like a direct mail campaign or an ad in some big magazine.
I need a trifold brochure.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we'll sit down and say, no, you really don't need that. You need to do this or that. And we come in and we just treat it as a normal scenario. I will say they're the first ones that we call if we're in a bind to rearrange our time if we need to.
Right.
And most, 9 times out of 10, they're cool with that.
That's one of the things that they give you in return.
Right. A little flexibility.
Yeah, and I was going to say that I think it's pretty common, honestly, especially in young designers, to when they first start doing their pro bono work. It's I think a lot of them don't take that upfront time to plan out, here's what I'm actually going to give you, here's how we're going to get from point A to point B to point Z. I think they just say, okay, I'll do this work for you. And then just, I would say almost the very nature of working with a nonprofit with places that are staffed with volunteer people, that it's very easy for those projects to then kind of spiral out of control
and
take a very, very long time and more resources maybe than you were originally, you know, willing to commit.
And that's a big reason we started doing that. Also, typically when you do the trade-out scenario, the expectation is you maybe are able to push it a little bit more than you would typically creatively or that sort of scenario.
Do you actually work that into the contract, or is that just kind of unwritten?
For us, it seems fairly unwritten, but we do talk about it. But the reason we sat down in the beginning,
you guys have a take on that? Oh, sorry, you were still going.
No, that's right. That's
I'm
right.
A horrible go.
No,
host.
No. I don't want to.
I'm out of here. Donovan, take over.
Sounds good. I've been waiting for this forever.
What I was going to finish saying was just that the sooner you're up front with everything and you treat it like a normal job, for lack of better terms, then they respect the process and what you're giving them. And then that also reduces the feedback back and forth when they don't really respect the process because they're like, oh, they're giving it to us. So I've had the reverse happen, you know, where someone's like, oh, yeah, I want 100 million changes because you're doing it for free and you obviously must have all the time in the world. Your time's not always respected unless you sit down and treat it like.
So do you still do a signed contract with We Will?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Christine, do you think that it's easy for people to devalue that which you're giving them for free? Sort of like, here's a free toaster, you don't care about the toaster, here's a $150 toaster, all of a sudden it's amazing?
I mean, I think that you can. I think it is part of the education. Like Justin said, you have to be upfront with them. I've also done work for Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, where we had done their gala every year. Before Christopher Down with Bungalow Creative started Bungalow Creative, we did the very first year and did that process with them. I mean, you're dealing with a lot of people that they have a small staff usually because they're volunteers or they're nonprofit, so they can't pay their staff as well. They may not have the kind of person that would understand how to market themselves.
Right,
so you've really got to educate them. And ultimately, Leukemia and Lymphoma came around, did the same thing that you were saying, Justin, and now they're able to pay a little more. So you just build that relationship over time. And when they are able to pay, I think that they will.
That's good, because that initial
forward,
work, you're making them money so they can come back and pay you.
Well, I mean, in the very first, they did see the value in that. The very first one we did, we doubled their numbers of attendance. So,
oh, nice. Good work.
Which was great. And it's been going up ever since that it was taken over. So.
Yeah, I would see that. And from a creative standpoint, I found that being basically working in a very small shop myself, that be doing things like even for local AIGA events or this poster, it's a way for me to actually work with designers I otherwise wouldn't get to work with.
Well, yeah, there's certainly that. I mean, we can certainly talk about that as far as today goes. Working with you guys was amazing. Just to just kind of see. I love this.
Watching us sit
this
there.
Really? Yeah. Stare at each other?
We're all quiet.
I think I picked my nose
in
there somewhere.
Is somebody going to take the lead
ends
on
up,
this?
Ends up, no matter how much talent someone has, when they're in front of a computer, they're just in front of a computer, and they just move the mouse like everyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
That was kind of heartbreaking a little bit. I thought, like, you know, Justin be on the table, like, you know, pounding on the... pounded on the keyboard or something.
Yeah, the energy level was really high.
I know, yeah. Steve. Sorry about that black eye. I will pay for
that. Yeah. Oh, that's okay. I saw that move before, and I just have been more aware.
Yeah, I will not apologize for biting Christine, though. You earned that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I know. I misbehaved.
I want to ask you guys about. I want to ask whether or not it's really a misconception or not. It's certainly you can't talk about doing pro bono work or you know, this sort of work for the greater good without talking about this idea of having a greater creative freedom in the projects that you do. I know one very high profile project of this nature that you've all seen, and I will tell you about after the microphone turns off, because I don't want to burn in anyone else's bridges, but that where that assumption was made and then the project turned out to be just
the opposite,
gut bendingly horrible from mm-hmm. start to finish, and it was a control freak sort of situation, and it was completely unhappy. Have either of you found yourselves, or any of you, sorry, found yourselves in that kind of a situation before, maybe not something so bad as that, but that where there was, it was perhaps implied that greater creative freedom would come from it that ultimately did not? Or do you guys always get what you want?
No, you never get what you want. I never expect to force my creativity wishes on project. I mean, there had been a few times where I tried, and then it's sometimes fruitless, and you just get burned, or you just, they're not very appreciative, and it's always, I think, better just to kind of work with them as a teammate and kind of a collaborator and just try to get through the process and get it done for the cause versus your own portfolio. I can say that more easily at my point or my time of my career, because I'm not trying to build a portfolio anymore.
Right,
I
was just
going
to throw it to you.
I've basically just given up at this point in my career. So.
take it from the point of view of, say, a designer with 2 to 5 years experience, where they don't have, obviously, you know, the insight that you have of, you know, having done this for a long time and having a lot of success at it, where it really, you know, we can look at a project pretty easy and say, okay, I need to establish goals. We need, what's the ultimate thing we're trying to achieve? Whereas maybe a young designer is like, okay, I want to make something that's totally awesome, mm-hmm. that's just going to be completely rad for these guys and do things for them that are great. That might be less about establishing goals and, you know, planning out a project and more about just making something sweet.
Right.
I think what you're describing, though, is like a single project. What they're describing, though, is like a full campaign and really helping someone out, going back and doing the work for the client repeatedly.
Is that true?
For a lot of stuff, yeah.
I mean, I've done both. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think for that younger person, though, that they really want to create that sweet project, they right. should go for it. They should shoot for the stars and get, you know, if they get shot down, that's good, too. You know, it may hurt their ego a little bit, but that's part of learning how to be a professional designer. They need to go shoot for the stars and create and experiment and try and present that to the client mm-hmm. and sell it.
It's a good primer for beginning to work absolutely. With clients, yeah. I think.
Right, so. And they should get shot down. I don't think they should be afraid to do it. That just builds character.
Last time you were in town, Steve, you actually talked about, it was after our show when we had the event.
I was drunk, I don't remember.
but you made a point that I've still remembered, which was that if you, kind of typically people come up with about 3 ideas that you pitch to a client, and they only take one of them. So by nature in our profession, you're wrong 2/3 of the time.
You're being shot down, or your ego's been batted down 66% of the time.
Can I throw a completely off-topic question at you guys? Who has the more fragile ego, the young designer or the seasoned designer? The veteran, let me say, not necessarily seasoned.
Well, I've gotten hurt a lot today sitting around these right, right. getting shot
and
down.
Again, I apologize.
They won't let me use hobo in this poster, so it's really, really hurting
Comic
me.
Sans, baby.
I think young designers come out overconfident sometimes, mm-hmm. and that it comes from an insecurity. So they probably, their ego appears big on the outside, but they're actually insecure. And so
gotcha.
I can't say that coming out of design school, you know, you get to do what you want in design school for the most part. I
right.
mean, with some added structure. And I see it time and time again, this overconfidence. And I think just as you learn how to control that as you become more seasoned. What do you guys think?
I think the only time I get bummed out, and this happened recently, is when we did, I thought, an amazing project for a client. And then we looked at what they had before we started working with them. And then you look at what we presented. And we knew it was light years beyond where they were.
Right.
And they liked the old stuff better.
Ouch.
That hurt a little bit.
Yeah, that hurt. And that kind of hurts more than just having a creative
director say, I don't.
Did
they actually just give you a reason,
type?
Or did they just say, we like the old stuff better?
Well, they couldn't articulate the reason. And in the end, I feel they were just really uncomfortable. They were used to what they had. They were uncomfortable to change, even though they said they wanted it. So we've been walking them through the process and having them more involved, which has been painful. But we're making progress.
You're getting back to it.
Yeah,
that's good. What I was going to say, I mean, I want to swing it back around to the topic at hand. I don't want to focus on the hurt, but you know, when you're working on nonprofit stuff, I think it's generally, unless you're just completely in it for your book and nothing else, you're working on something they care about. So if you get shut down like that, probably going to hurt a little bit worse. But the other benefit and the reason that I think aside from just having the ability to help people by lowering your budget is the heart that you get back, the love that you get back from that. Do you guys have any examples that you might be able to share with our audience? What was the best thing you ever got back non-monetarily from a nonprofit project?
Just the thanks from knowing that we did a good job and everyone was thankful.
And that giant Abraham Lincoln hat.
Yeah.
And the beard. Giant hat.
The whole outfit.
Do you have the beard, by the way?
I do. It says real beard. It's pretty amazing.
I actually, it's interesting doing the leukemia and lymphoma. The first one that we did, we shot survivors of different ages, an older gentleman, older woman, and a young girl who was a teenager who had leukemia most of her life. And we got to dress them up in Betsy Johnson and shoot. We actually shot in Betsy Johnson and did the photo shoot. And just to see the look on their faces and excited that they got to be in this campaign, it was great to see them that night. And we actually, that was about 5 years ago. We just went to the other gala last year. And to see her grow up and still be a part of this organization. I don't know. There's something sweet about going. Of course, we get invited to the gala for doing it, and just to see the look on their faces and how appreciative they are just to be alive, and it really gives you a perspective. So.
Yeah. Oh, that's wonderful.
I just got a letter the other day from the book that we did for LA where this...
Right, which I haven't seen. Thanks.
Yeah, it's in the mail.
Nice.
Right.
All right.
Yeah. Whereas... Some parents showed their kids the book, and the son, who was 8, gave his allowance for a month to support the organization because he was so surprised and shocked and moved by what's going on over there. And that was pretty cool.
That's pretty rad. Donovan, I'm feeling pretty good about this show.
Yeah, and...
I'm feeling like I'm giving back right now.
And we got someone else going to be giving back all season long, and that's Mig Reyes.
Thank you for not forgetting our new feature, the student
tip
by Mig. The Mig tip.
Every show. Mig, what's your tip for the students?
My student tip for this episode is embracing the value of writing. Because as a student, especially a design student, the last thing you want to do is write. You just want to design all day. But the biggest thing that I learned as a student was knowing that every bit of copy in your design, writing about your work and writing about yourself, is huge. Because if you can't communicate verbally and in the written word, then you trying to design is probably not a good idea. Because that's what you're trying to do.
That was the most amazing student tip I've ever heard.
Jeez.
OMG, I can't even stand it.
I almost wish I was back in school just to
learn
more
from
that.
It was
a long time ago.
Totally relevant to the topic that we just discussed, and I love that even more. But no, I would like to thank the three of you guys for coming out this weekend to work on this project, to make something happen for this really great organization.
Well, thanks for making it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Awesome.
Shazam. And for all the makers,
Mark. Let's do this kind of mess more often, I say.
I agree.
Let's do good in the world just because we can.
Well, we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, the Reflex Blue Show, season 2, episode 2, the Deuce.
Wait, we didn't get to tell you happy anniversary.
Yeah, congratulations.
Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary.
That was wonderful. Let's go out on that.
To send questions or comments to The Reflex Blue Show, please visit 36point.com. The Reflex Blue Show is hosted by Nate Voss and Donovan Beery, music produced by Dust Lab. Find out more at myspace.com/dustlab.